Welcome to Oh No You Didn't. We watch this shit so you don't have to. This week, Babylon 5, Season 1, Episode 10, Believers. So, let's go. Welcome to the first episode of Oh No You Didn't, a fortnightly podcast dealing with the worst in science fiction and fantasy. I am Shane, and joined with me is my co-host Darren.
Hello!
Two special guests this week, that's Matt and Gillian from the Babylon Project.
Hello!
Hello!
This week we will be reviewing Babylon 5, Season 1, Episode of Believers. But before we start on that, Matt and Gillian, do you want to tell our listeners where you come from?
I come from the land of the ice and snow, with the midnight sun and the hot springs blow.
Hammer of the gods.
Northern Norway, then.
Yeah.
How did you guess? We both hail from the Babylon Project podcast, which is the Geek Planet Online's Babylon 5 Watch podcast. Is it not, my dear captain?
I think so. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we're not really good at self-promotion.
Oh.
You know, it's we do a podcast and share.
Yeah, we're just like these two idiots off the internet.
Like internet loudmouths, and we just sort of talk shit about Babylon 5 and stuff.
But hopefully in a way that newcomers can access.
Yes. Host of an amazing Babylon 5 podcast, if I do say so myself.
Oh,
well, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
Very kind.
So as I said, we'll be talking about Bad Leavers, and we'll get started.
Although after rewatching it, I'm tempted to pronounce it Believers because it really was that kind of level.
Yeah.
You leave Justin alone. Justin's this generation's Usher.
He will fight you if you diss Justin, honestly.
I've got into fist fights for less. I really haven't. I just want to make it clear. If people have the right to their own beliefs, you see what we're doing there, about music, I just don't choose to share in the Bieber.
Yes.
That's a lie.
Gillian. It's not a lie. Jesus. Buy one Avril Lavigne album and you're forever tarred.
There's nothing wrong with Avril Lavigne.
It was two Avril Lavigne. Three Avril Lavigne albums, because the fourth one was shit.
Well, I'm content to leave it to the Bieber anyway.
Okay. Okay, anyway. We'll get back on track somehow. We open a Mad Lab, and a young alien boy named Sharon is being monitored by Dr. Stephen Franklin. And Dr. Hernandez, while his parents, Mulder and Targ, watch over him. And the boy's got some sort of easy to heal disease, and the parents don't want it to operate, basically.
And Mr. and Mrs. Eggface, I'm sorry. Your son has space clap. But don't worry, we have space penicillin. I use it quite often myself, for I am Mr. Boombastic, and everything will be fine. Yes. I hope that's not against your religion. I'm just improving the episode, honestly, because nothing can make Believers worse.
Yes. I was actually going to say, this is actually, I've just completed my first rewatch of Babylon 5 in about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I skipped this episode when I did the rewatch.
Yeah.
So when I watched it earlier today for this podcast, I felt sure that the mother was actually Martha Hatchett.
Do you know who she is? She's Captain Rachel Garrett from yesterday's Enterprise.
Oh, really?
Really.
Thank you. I've been trying to place her and I couldn't place her.
Yeah, it's Trisha O'Neill.
And I tell you what, the coincidences don't stop coming there because, of course, the dad is played by Corbin Burnson. Mm. That's a lie. I can't substantiate that. And I didn't mean Corbin Burnson anyway. I've forgotten the guy. Who's their second in command? He was in Happy Gilmore. And it's not Corbin Burnson from L.A. Law.
No, it's
although
not.
He looks
a
bit like him. Anyway, him.
Him.
That joke would have worked otherwise. See, this is why we do editing on our show, because I make a shit joke like that, and Gillian tells me it's shit, and I delete it out. That's how this works. Oh, well.
Carry on, Darren.
I'm wondering if the writer was self-conscious about the quality of the writing when they named one of the characters after a Klingon pig.
Well, it's the episode is certainly equal to the contents of that pig's stomach. we kind of made this discussion on our own show because it was written by David Gerrold, of course, who's well known for writing Star Trek: The Original Series, amongst other things,
and a very good writer.
Usually a very good writer, and you know. I kind of got the impression that it was maybe a rejected Star Trek script that had sat in a drawer for quite some time. In all seriousness, that sat in a drawer for a while, and because it had never got used for Trek for whatever reason, got dusted off and had certain characters kind of go into Microsoft Word, find Kirk, replace Sinclair. And they'd just kind of done a bit of that on it.
Which isn't in any way the case, because it was the story outline was written by Straczynski and he commissioned Gerrold to write it.
Yeah.
Which even makes it more embarrassing.
Yeah. I know.
And trying.
I was looking. I was actually looking online earlier, just before we started recording, for some online reviews. And I'm quoting a review here, so don't kill me.
Okay.
Quote, "This is one of the best moral and psychological episodes of the series. It's a real tearjerker for me every time, and it makes me thankful that I'm not a doctor, so I don't have to worry about these issues."
It's all right. The doctor on the show didn't worry about it that much either.
Boom!
I think it's certainly a well-intentioned episode, and I do know it does have fans. And it's not like it's one of those episodes where the Doctor does this kind of stuff and we're supposed to be on his side, which I guess is saving grace. But it's just, I find it very heavy-handed.
I mean, it's worth so nice to actually see the Doctor, because before this, he's just really a background character, isn't he?
Yes, very much so.
Well, it is actually the first Franklin-centric episode, as I recall, so... It's just a shame that this is how you get a proper introduction to your
doctor. Exactly.
The doctor's character.
Hey, audience, our doctor's a dick.
Well, pretty much. And when you consider how pivotal the character of the doctor is in space operas, you know, and that sort of lays, I think, I mean, Gillian's far more versed in televisual history than me, but I lay that purely at the feet of Leonard McCoy, because, and he himself was based, if I'm right, Gillian, he was sort of based on the sort of the idea of the Old West Doctor.
Yes,
maybe you've kind of picked me up there in a way that I can't back up in any shape.
Just say yes, and you're really knowledgeable.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
You're definitely right there, because the entire cast set on Enterprise, I'm sorry, the original series, is basically just a rewriting of Wagon Train. I think he's American.
Wagon Train from the Stars, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, certainly in my recollection as a viewer, my experience as a viewer, you know, you're starting with Bones McCoy and then moving forward. Space operas have always had a strong character, or a pivotal character in the ship's doctor or station doctor. And if you think of even Firefly, you know, Simon Tam, the ship's doctor, is actually a pivotal character in Firefly, you know. If you can name a space opera, I mean, I'm just doing my first watch of Battlestar Galactica, for example. Mm-hmm. And is it Doc Cotton? Cotton?
Cottle.
Mm-hmm. Cottle, that's it. Doc Cottle, he's not in every episode. He's pretty much at this point, because as I say, I've just started my watch, so I'm sort of midway through season two. At this point, he's pretty much the only properly medically trained person, but the only doctor anywhere in the fleet. Mm-hmm. So he turns up when they have a medical thing that needs doing, which is in every episode. But he's a very, very well-defined character and very, very important within the context of the show and the fabric of the story. Mm-hmm. So here we have our Babylon 5's proper introduction to our Doctor, and it's, it's something that happened.
Yes. Going back to the episode, we see that Evanova is going to rescue a ship.
Yes,
In a small little subplot that goes nowhere.
Yep. Yeah. After having a little tantrum about being required to do her job as second in command.
Yes.
Oh, those fighting words.
Yeah.
It goes up to this big battle, and of course, then it cuts off in typical Star Trek style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's given how well known Babylon 5 is for the quality of its space battles, this is not a good example.
No, it's not.
I just think they're short on budget at this point. What are we? Season episode 10 of the first season?
Yeah.
It's probably that.
I certainly think it's a budgetary concern. I don't think it's a case that they ran out of money by episode 10. But it's more a case of they had to be very... I mean...
This is only the fifth episode filmed.
Yes.
Yeah, and they had to be very careful about how budget was used. So if it's not strictly necessary to show a space battle, you can understand why they didn't. Mm-hmm. But yes, as this was shown as the 10th episode of the season, even if it was only the 5th filmed, at this stage, you're, I guess, a viewer's hoping to be getting into the real meat of things. So yeah, to sort of shy away from that is a little disappointing if you don't know the back history.
Yeah.
Where they left it until Garibaldi's comet, it actually looked like she'd basically led the attack party back to the ship she was supposed to be protecting.
Well, she basically does a Han Solo in Star Wars, doesn't she? Ah! Oh, shit. Nope.
She really does have some moves, though.
I got the moves like Susan. I won't. We sing a lot. We do that.
Yes. We do.
I should point out, I might get you to do that on a backing track.
I charge £10,000 an hour for my awesome backing vocals.
Has anybody got a chain for Fire P?
Yeah.
So. They going back to the boy, they say if they open up, he'll lose his soul. No problem.
Well, Shang Tsung's waiting in the next room. Your soul is mine. eggy.
I don't know of any 10-year-old kid who's never opened up their skin, as in from a fall or something.
Yeah.
I think Joe has said in the past that it's intended to mean like a nick or a scrape or something isn't an issue, but actually cutting into your body.
Yeah.
But that's not stated on screen.
No, it's not at all.
So therefore it is a massive gaping hole. It's like, seriously, none of you are ever allowed to break your skin?
Yeah.
I know.
I can fix this.
Okay,
on their planet,
okay,
they are fueled by the yellow sun, giving them skin like Superman. The children of the egg can fly. Sadly, that planet got destroyed when General Zod landed and forced them all to kneel. And yeah, it was all a bit embarrassing. Yeah. There was a big punch up, and it was still better than Superman Returns.
Dr. Franklin Jashon, a gloppic egg. From the planet Placebo.
Yeah. Because of course, all 10-year-olds are stupid.
Yes.
See, the joke's on Franklin. He just grabbed that out of his drawer. That's actually a kidney stone taken out of a 47-year-old Pac-Mara.
The one that took me 20 years to pass it.
The one that does the little wobble when he leaves the...
Yeah,
Wiggles!
Yes.
That was him. That was him. He actually left it in the bowl. He was so delighted to be finally shot of it that he did a little dance on his way out.
They do really go heavily into the religious symmetries here by not only having them not permit surgery, but also he's not permitted to watch television.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jehovah's Witness, anyone?
Yeah, it's very heavy-handed.
I don't know, I think we're actually getting into Whisper territory with this one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Right. That's very, very true. Sinclair meets with Michael Garibaldi and Franklin. And just tries to demand that... Franklin tries to demand Sinclair he gives him authority in the case. And then the parents go around to all the ambassadors.
Yep.
Yes, behaving them least ambassador-like.
It does give him a favourite cautism of the entire series.
Yeah, absolutely.
The most oft-quoted cautism, I believe. Well, certainly in my experience. Yes. I don't think that's an official thing. Like, somebody goes around tallying up all the Kosh quotes. Mm. But it's in my experience, I should say, it's quoted a lot.
I think the Centauri ambassador was the most realistic. Oh, yes, we really care. How much are you willing to pay us for this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How much justice can you afford? But, I mean, it's interesting at this point, the parallels between... Londa and Jakar already, because although they're enemies, Jakar as much as says the same thing, like, you've got nothing of value to us, why should we help you?
Definitely.
Yeah, but it's still, even now, it still grates on me, that whole thing of, we thought your hatred of the Earthers would be enough. What hatred of the Earthers? What evidence has there been for this on screen? None whatsoever.
I know.
Like, it also is kind of annoying when they go and see Delenn, because Delenn's like, oh, you know, this is our religious belief. And they're like, what you mean you can't violate your religious belief so that we can maintain our religious beliefs? It's just like this whole hypocrisy bubble of horror.
I know. I mean...
It only gets worse in retrospect as you go down the series and these characters are more defined. Mm. And you get to see how they're supposed to be and their attitudes to things. This episode really is an anomaly on the writing level. It really is.
The only thing that could make this episode worse is a guy in bad makeup. Infection.
Oh,
that was great makeup. that was awesome makeup. Interesting side note, first screen role for William Edgar's penis. So there you go. There's all right, I slipped in a little Babylon Project joke there. It's been on my mind.
Okay.
William Edgar's penis has been going through my... No, wait.
No!
No, wait, that's just... No.
What, through the ear?
I don't know, there's several ways you could make this worse. You could have the heartthrob character going to Warp 10 in a shuttlecraft.
Yeah! you just... And then having lizard babies with the captain.
Darren, you've just spoiled what we're going to be reviewing next time.
Well, you know, I'm sure you're making a reference there, but the thing is, I don't understand it, because, you know, if that had happened in an episode of let's say, for sake of argument, a new iteration of an existing franchise, it would be so mind-numbingly fucking awful that I'd have erased it from my memory. So it's a good job that didn't happen, because it would lead to some embarrassment otherwise.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, yes. Okay, note to self, don't tell Matt what we're viewing next in 2 weeks' time. basically, they have a big debate on whether they should open it up.
No, you carry on, that's...
No, we get back to Hulk Hogan.
Debate.
A debate on whether we should open up the kid, and Sinclair says,
"Make it worse. You're making it worse."
they shouldn't, but Franklin does it anyway.
Yeah.
And then he opens up the kid, and then they find out. Shock horror! They're going to kill the kid anyway. Oh my god!
Yeah. Like, we didn't all see that coming a mile away.
Yeah.
You see, Doctor, there's this concept you should have picked up on in university. It's called research.
Yeah.
Would that be the research that Maya was doing?
Yes. He should have had the results of his research before he actually made his choices.
Right? Like, you would think the slightest compatibility or understanding of their religious practices and beliefs before telling them those beliefs were rubbish might have given him some kind of standpoint, but no. He just, you know, casually looks at the screen later on when it's convenient to the plot.
The gruff captain...
You go ahead, Dan, sorry.
The gruff and... At this point, they're still trying to make him an unreasonable captain of the space station, has a better bedside manner and medical ethic than his doctor does.
Well, he's the only person in the entire episode who asks the child what he thinks.
Yeah, instead of talking about the child in the child's presence.
But I noticed something this time around that I don't think I noticed before. That kid condemns himself to egg hell or wherever it is they go. Because he's forbidden to talk to outsiders about their religion. Yep. Sinclair sits down and goes, "No, I'm not a child of the egg. Tell me about it." And it fades out. And how was feeling, Danian? No, that's something else. but the point is, it's implied that the child does tell Sinclair about the religion, which he's been expressly forbidden to do by his religion. And if he can't tell a Pak Barak gallstone, kidney stone, about their religion, what's he going to get for telling a heathen human being?
Yeah.
A non-believing human being. Yeah. But that's a convenient thing that's forgotten. Because reasons.
Because this
The kid was passing
out of shit.
The kid was passing that off as proselytizing.
Yes. Excellent point. He seemed kind of open to it. I thought he might get on board.
Yeah.
Then he found out that we're not allowed to eat bacon because it's really offensive to egg people. And he was out.
Actually, don't the parents call Franklin an egg sucker mammaloid at one point?
They do. Yeah, the father does, in fact, call him.
Right, yeah.
Egg-sucking mammaloid. which is actually the name of my Oasis cover band.
going back to this review that I've got in front of me, and it might... one of the strengths of this episode is that it never says that Franklin is right and the parents are wrong.
No, Franklin says that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Franklin says that a lot.
Yes,
you know, I think that's true, and I think it is one of its very few strengths is that it doesn't say, "Oh, you know, the way you as a viewer would probably respond is the right way to respond."
And another one of these positive things, and this might get a bit going. The reason why it's so good is because it's a standalone episode.
Well, that's only because the other episodes are refusing to stand next to it.
I'm a coconut.
10 points to Gryffindor for that.
I'm literally just reading what it says here.
In some shows, standalone can be a great thing, but I think in the context of Babylon 5 as a televisual novel, we've all read novels or series of novels that have connected short stories within that universe that are not connected to the main plot. But within a television series, that's a little odd.
Is there anything in this that is in the overall plot?
Not actual plot points, but we have on, after we watched it on our podcast, we have at various points since then gone, oh, actually, that relates back to Believers, or that relates back to something someone said or someone's point of view back in that episode. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say it was exactly standalone, but I wouldn't say it was integral.
No, you can take this episode out quite easily, can't you?
Yeah,
I think, I mean, Gillian's right. I mean, when we covered it on our show, I think there were, in our down below section, there were things that we did connect back to the sort of plot arc as a whole. And as Gillian just said, we, as the podcast went forward, there was stuff that we were saying, ah, actually, in retrospect, we didn't remember this, but actually this connects back to that. But I do agree that it's not integral, that you can... I hate to say this about any episode of Babylon 5, especially any episode of Season 1, because we got so little Sinclair. Mm-hmm. And I guess these days, especially now with towards the end of Season 5, and not only is it fresh in my memory, it's also we've analysed it, which is something that, you know, I outside of podcast land, you don't tend to do. You tend to watch for enjoyment. Yeah. But... the only thing I can think to recommend it is an episode with Sinclair in it, and any episode with Sinclair in it is worth watching because there are so precious few of them.
The latest episode I listened to the Babylon Project was the episode it did in Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And there are things that you can watch Dawn of the this is just my opinion here. Dawn of the Dead is pretty much a standalone episode. However, there are elements in the episode that hark back and hark forward.
I get what you're saying with Day of the Dead. It's a difficult thing to talk about because Season 5 in of itself stands fairly apart from the rest because of the nature of how it came into being and the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not a standalone episode within the context of Season 5. If you take Season 5 as a single year long arc, which, you know, arguably it is, it's certainly not standalone within the context of the single year long arc because there is foreshadowing. Of plot points that I won't discuss here because of our own listeners, we don't discuss things habit out of context. But there is also stuff relating to this character development. You find out a lot about Captain Lockley, for example. So I personally wouldn't agree in calling it standalone, not within the context of its year long arc, and certainly not within the Sorry, Gillian, carry on.
I think the difference between the two is that with Day of the Dead, there are a lot of things that if you hadn't watched previous episodes of Babylon 5, you'd be like, who's this guy? Why is he here? What's his relevance? Which you wouldn't necessarily have with Believers because everyone's roles are clearly defined.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Controversially, I would say one of the very few completely standalone episodes of Babylon 5 is actually my favourite episode of Babylon 5, which is Passing Through Gethsemane.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what? You're right, and you just reminded me, and now I'm sad.
Sorry.
Yeah, something Pathetic Gethsemane is one of my favorite episodes because it has Brad Dourif in it.
Well, yes. Being amazing.
Yeah, well, Brad Dourif's always amazing there, isn't he?
Yeah, it goes without saying, really.
Yeah, it does. It does. I've only ever seen him in one role that I couldn't stand, and that film has gone straight out of my head.
Oh, probably for the best.
Yeah, it was on a the Crow VHS. It was a double feature.
Ah, right.
So I just bought the VHS for the Crow, and watched the other film once. Never again.
Please tell me the Crow was first, and you didn't have to fast forward through.
Crow was first.
Oh, there was nothing worse in the day than having to fast forward through something so you could watch the episode or the film that you actually wanted.
Yes.
No.
I'm just glad that Brad, you know, they never made a fourth Alien movie, because if they had, Brad Dourif might have been in it, and had he been in it, it might have been shit. So, you know, again, I'm really glad that never happened. because I would imagine the end product would have been so mind-numbingly awful that, again, I would have blanked it from my memory. And, that would have been embarrassing.
As I look over to my Alien Blu-ray collection, I see three films.
It's weird they give you that fourth blank disc. I mean, I guess you're supposed to use it as a coaster or, maybe as a spare. But, yeah, it's weird. But, well, whatever.
See, I always assumed when they called it the Alien Quadrilogy that they were just referring, well, counting the extras disc as like a separate film or something.
Possibly. Mind you, it could just be a bullshit made up disc to go up with the bullshit made up word quadrilogy.
Possibly.
Which, if I ever find the marketing person that coined that word, I'm going to beat him to death with his own shoes, like Del Preston.
Yes, jam. Yes, Josh Whedon.
It was not Joss Whedon. Don't lie. That's not very nice.
No, sorry.
Maybe the fourth disc is just JPEGs of Sigourney Weaver in her underwear again.
That's what the pause function is for. I imagine. I'm told.
Yes. Going on a slight tangent here. I'm doing a rewatch of the Resident Evil films.
Why?
Did you lose a bet?
You can both go to hell. They're awesome.
Exactly.
Apart from the last one, which was really fucking awful.
Yeah, but I forgot how many times Mila Djokovic. Her.
Horber! It's a Mexican bean!
Yes. I forgot how many times she's naked in the films.
That's because her husband basically... his entire film career now is telling people how hot his wife is.
Mm.
Which doesn't need doing because I've got eyes.
Yeah, so I don't particularly find her that attractive.
Well, to each their own. Mind you, you know, it's a very niche subset of films. You know, the telling the world my wife is hot films. See also the oeuvre of Len Wiseman.
Well, we've gone on a completely different wrong tangent. There we are. We love this episode, folks. Don't you? Can't you tell?
So much.
Is there anything else that we could discuss on this episode?
Well, there's quite a lot of talk of, we see a lot of religious intolerance, but there is quite a lot of discussion of religious tolerance. Mostly, which is a good thing, from Sinclair, who obviously becomes an important religious figure himself.
Of course. I hop back to, oh goodness, what's the episode earlier on in the season when Sinclair has got all those religious leaders out?
That is
Parliament of
Dreams. Yeah, indeed. So you can already see a religious function, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I'm not sure if it's been shown in the series by this point, but he was educated by Jesuits as well.
I think that comes up in Parliament of Dreams as well. I'm sure it's Parliament of Dreams.
I've got a funny feeling that comes up in Babylon Squared.
He mentioned, maybe.
Yeah.
Season one was a while ago.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
See, yes. for anybody who's listening to this, I am actually guest hosting on the Down Below podcast of Babylon 5 Introcast on the episode Babylon Squared in a few weeks' time.
Ooh. That's a bit of a plum roll, isn't it?
Right, so we get saddled with believers.
Yes.
And you just piss off to do Babylon Squared elsewhere. I see how this goes. No, that's right. Okay.
I had to watch it too, you know.
If you haven't watched Believers whilst drinking Brivari, you haven't.
I heard that. Yeah. I heard that.
Oh, the drunken commentary.
Yes. That was quite. I should have actually re-listened to that before.
No
one needs to do that. Just, I lost sight in my one eye. I began to empathise with Jakar because I lost sight in one eye from drinking that Brivari, which is hands down the most lethal cocktail I've ever consumed. And I say this as a man who once drank a large glass of champagne and absinthe. Which was handed to me by somebody who to this day maintains they're my friend, with the words, "Try this, it'll fuck you up." And I did. I don't know why.
And name check on air?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think it's fair.
Okay.
In fairness, it's not like you weren't warned.
Shut up, you.
Oh, God.
Dude, I found a recipe for Brivari. Okay.
While we're on the subject of tolerance versus intolerance, Dr. Franklin is really playing a version of My God's Better Than Your God.
Really? Really, and it's awful in context with the rest of the series, because when we learn what Franklin's religious persuasion actually is,
definitely,
it's the antithesis of what he professes in this episode. Like, the basis of his religious faith is finding the truth in all religions.
Yeah.
And yet he dismisses these people's beliefs out of hand without doing the slightest bit of looking into it.
In fairness, they did call him an egg-sucking mammaloid.
It's true.
Well, I think it's fairly well. It was pretty well called for.
I mean, if you look at the tenets and you read the scripture of Stephen's faith, it actually clearly expresses all bets are off if somebody calls you an egg-sucking mammaloid.
And it wouldn't actually be so bad if he hadn't lectured Maya Hernandez for the exact same thing. Almost minutes before he does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Do you know, the funny thing is, I thought of the conversation that Gillian and I had about that very thing on our show when we covered it, while I was watching it for this show tonight. And I went, you know what? I don't know whether I didn't take it in last time, but he's not just doing that. It's even worse than that. He's like, don't make fun of the patient's religion. Basically lie to them a lot until they get desperate and agree to do whatever you want. Yeah. Like, it's not just lecturing her on the morality of attacking somebody, or the appropriateness of attacking somebody's religion in front of them when they don't agree with you. He's like, we don't do that. Basically, we bullshit them and pretend we like them until they get desperate and do what we want. Which is even worse.
Or we respond to being called an egg-sucking mammaloid by pretending a piece of industrial plastic is an egg.
Yes.
I still want a gloppy egg.
Oh, dear.
Well, if you give me 5 minutes, I'll go to the bathroom. I'm sure I can make you one.
Ew.
Oh, my.
Okay, I'm expecting a name change on Facebook to Hulk Pool now.
So what?
Hulk.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yes.
maybe while you're making the gloppet egg, you know, you could do a tribute to the Ultimate Warrior by grabbing something and shaking it rapidly as you grit your teeth. Making a gloppet egg. No, do you know what? That's a gag that only works visually and nobody can see me.
No, I don't speak here to the dead.
I wasn't speaking ill of the dead. I was talking about tribute.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Yes. Anything else you want to say, Dan, Matt, Julian?
No. I think it's well intentioned. Mm-hmm. I think at the time it was a topical issue, mm-hmm. but I think it's ham-fisted. I think it's bordering on offensive, mm-hmm. and it's not true to the regular characters.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, as we've finished the review part, we'll be back in about a couple of seconds after you play this ad. And we'll be back for our ratings. And what would be telling everybody what we're reviewing in the fortnight.
In every generation, there is a podcast where one alone has watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer before. The three others must stand against the spoilers, the synopses, and the forces of DVD commentary tracks. This is Potential Cast.
This is Stephanie.
This is Kim.
I'm Gabby.
I'm Illyrio.
I see sort of myself in Cordelia.
I really like that line for some reason.
The show does that a lot, and I really like it.
I love Child's explanation about Buffy's a Slayer. Don't tell anyone. That's all the information you need.
We do have a lot of feedback.
Whether you're brand new to Buffy or you're a seasoned rewatcher, come find us at PotentialCast.com.
And we're back. So, who should I let go first?
And a fortnight is 2 weeks for our American friends.
Indeed. Let's go for Julian. What would you rate this out of 10?
Ooh. In terms of everything ever or in terms
everything,
of Babylon
5? Everything ever.
In terms of everything ever? A 4.
4. Okay. Matt?
Well, I'm going to go slightly, ever so slightly lower than Julian here. I rate it pie. Pie out of 10.
Well, because you're that hungry?
Yes, and Org ate most of it because he's a fiend for pies. Hi, Org!
So that's a 3.142756.
You just pulled up a calculator on your computer, didn't you?
No, actually.
Another 10 points to Gryffindor for remembering pie.
Physics major.
Ah.
And Darren, out of 10?
Well, considering I was tempted to start watching Galactica 1980 after this.
Oh, God, no!
I'm going to go with a 2, I think. It's just... If this had been the only episode of Babylon 5 I'd ever seen, I would never have watched another one again.
So like Hulk Hogan, you're going for number 2?
Yes. And a python-sized one at that.
Oh, God. And I'm going to have to complete the quadrilogy by going for 3 myself.
You've gone on a list. Just so you're aware, you've got a list.
Yeah, it's not exactly the best episode of Babylon 5, but it's not quite the worst either.
Well, far be it from us to say.
Infection.
No, Infection is definitely better than this.
Okay.
Really?
Yes. Yes, Infection is better than this.
You know what is worse than this?
Are you going to say
what I think you're going to say?
I'm going to say a late delivery from Avalon.
Fuck off, Jakar gets a knighthood. That automatically makes it awesome.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say Grey 17 is missing.
No, that has Naroon in it.
That, yeah. Okay. That has the best... close combat fight that Babylon 5 ever shows.
Okay.
Is it in fact the only one? No, it's not the only one. There is the ritual beating later on.
Actually, I think TKO is probably worse than this as well. it's on a par, certainly.
It's on a par, yeah.
That's okay, you guys are just giving us review material for later on.
Yeah, but see, the beauty about having already completed this for our own podcast is we don't actually have to sit through it for yours.
Yes.
So,
we've done it.
Yeah, so frankly, anything you do from here on in, you're only really hurting yourselves.
Yes. And talking of what we're reviewing in a fortnight, we're actually going to be reviewing Star Trek Voyager Threshold.
What's that? Was there a Trek series I never heard of? Mm. Oh, right, okay.
With Peter and Anne-Marie Organ.
Yay!
Good! They can feel our pain!
Well, as I said, that's next week. So, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.